content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the September-October issue of Scout Life. We're going to go to page 2 and finish up Airy on the Prairie. I enjoy your magazine. I'm happy you changed to Scout Life. I wrote to you back when I was in Cub Scouts about the title change. I hope I was one of many voices that led to the change. I just wanted to say that the magazine is entertaining to read, especially the comics and Scouts in Action. I would love you to come visit my troop, CCG in Gainesville, Florida.
Readers, you might not remember, but way back when CC was a Cub Scout, our great magazine Boys Life became Scout Life. And it's still the same great magazine. Just have CC. But now we feel like we get to represent all the Scouts and kids out there. Thanks to all of you who helped us come up with the name. And CC, we love to cover your troop. Let us know what you're up to by heading to go.scoutlife.org/outings and sharing your troop's plans.
The Invisible Bench is a staple skit. Make some bench jokes. That's from Henry S. in Chester, Virginia.
You know, I couldn't find a single bench joke on scoutlife.org. Among the thousands of jokes from our reader, not a single mention of a bench. I was shocked. In fact, I was so shocked, I needed to sit down. Okay, that's not quite a bench joke. It's not even quite a joke. But it's the best my bird brain could come up with. Share your humor with us by sending in some jokes. Now I'm off to celebrate another month of amazing letters from you all. Should I eat an eagle? I know you're all screaming, a collective, yes!
National Pumpkin Day is October 26th. Not only are pumpkins used in tasty recipes, but they also make amazing fall decorations. Turn to page 38 for how to make a stained glass pumpkin. Conquering the Alameda Creek Regional Trail. It was a hot and dusty afternoon in early June when I reached the top of a steep hill that marked the 40th mile I had biked that day. Whew, I was tired. My legs ached. My shoulders burned, and I had drops of sweat rolling down the back of my neck. It was the farthest I'd ever ridden, and we still had 10 more miles. Now, I knew why they called this basic training for new scouts. Nearly 20 of us first-year scouts were winding our way along the Alameda Creek Regional Trail in Fremont, California. It's a 25-mile trek from the staging area to San Francisco Bay. The last 10 miles were the hardest. By then, the line of riders stretched out for miles along the bay. The steepest part of the ride was up some observation hills, which required everyone to stand and pedal slowly but consistently to make it up all three slopes. I pushed myself harder than ever to make it up those hills. Although I put on plenty of sunblock, the sun seemed to burn hotter than ever. I knew then that if I stopped, I would lose momentum and never reach the end. The older scouts cheered us on from the top. I'm not exactly sure where I got the strength, but I made it to the top and the bay view looked great. That day, I biked 50.17 miles in 6 hours and 52 minutes. But that wasn't the end. Now I've led the 50-miler for a new generation of scouts. Physically, it was easier to complete a second time. However, as the senior patrol leader, I was responsible for their success or failure. My ride was only complete when all 17 scouts crossed the finish line, and they did. That's from Ethan W. in Danville, California. Has anything exciting happened to you lately? If you had an adventure and are under 18, write about it and send it to Reader's Page, Scout Life, S306, Post Office Box 157209, Irving, Texas 75015-2079, or via the e-form at scoutlife.org. You will receive this official contributor patch if we print your submission. Have a question? And don't know who to ask? Jenny and Steve are here for you. School is getting really hard. Is there anything I can do not to be so stressed? Steve, stress stinks. However, it's also an indicator that you actually care, which is critical to success in anything. My go-to move when I'm feeling overwhelmed is to make a list of things I must do along with deadline for each task. Breaking up things into pieces makes everything feel more manageable, and there's nothing quite like the satisfaction of crossing items off that list as you steadily knock them out. Jenny, lists are great, but if you're still feeling overwhelmed, don't be afraid to ask a teacher or parent for help. My guess is that the adults in your life don't have a clue how stressed you are and wouldn't want you to be feeling that way. Let them know how frazzled you feel, and maybe they'll be able to tweak something in your schedule to get you some extra help. Small changes can make a big difference. Canoeing in the Congaree, pages 10 through 12. When they encountered obstacles on the water, these scouts didn't back down. As Wyatt Puckle and Jackson McMichael paddled along a creek in Congaree National Park, they ducked under a low-hanging tree branches. They could lift some branches out of the way, but that presented a risk. After moving one, a foot-long snake dropped out of the tree and landed on Wyatt's knee. "I thought it was going to jump out of the canoe," Jackson recalls. "I wasn't. There were more snakes in the water," Wyatt says. Dodging non-venomous water snakes wasn't the only challenge Troop 8 of Columbia, South Carolina, faced during its weekend canoe trip this past April. But despite the challenges, the guys learned a lot and had fun in a beautiful park. Totally swamped. Congaree National Park in South Carolina features more than 26,000 acres, mainly of bottomland forest. These forests grow in places that flood often, creating boggy, shady environments ideal for many animals. Congaree attracts deer, foxes, beavers, alligators, amphibians, and birds. It also attracts adventurers who love to fish, hike, and canoe. Troop 8 had been to the park before. It's the largest old-growth bottomland forest in the southeast United States, with some trees growing 170 feet tall. And it's only a one-hour drive from where the troop meets. "It's an amazing place," says Jackson, 14, a Star Scout. "There's all sorts of greenery." This time, the troop would canoe a little over 6.5 miles. The plan could have changed quickly based on the river levels. On the average, Congaree floods 10 times a year, submerging many of the park's trains. The troop's leaders would need to watch the weather closely, both before and during the campout. On the water. After reviewing safety rules and properly putting on their life jackets, the scouts launched their canoes. Where you sit determines your role. Most of the steering is done from the back or stern of the boat, while the pace is set in the front or bow. "I could be a lot faster with a paddle when I'm up front," says Noah Putnell, 12, a tenderfoot scout. "When you're tandem canoeing, you have to work together. If you're both paddling on the same side of the boat, you won't travel straight. Communication is key, so you can move effectively and in unison." "I like being in the front because it's where the power of the boat is," says Everett Schaller, 12, a tenderfoot scout. "We learned the J stroke and the draw stroke. Knowing different strokes makes it easier to maneuver, and the guys had to figure out how to move in the narrow creek with overhanging branches and clogged pathways. Sometimes they had to slow down when approaching piles of wooden debris. It took us 10 minutes to get through like 5 feet of that," says Wyatt, 13, a first-class scout. "It was like a knife through ice. We powered through, but it was hard. They didn't give up. When a non-venomous snake fell in one of the canoes, they simply paddled to shore to let the slithering reptile out. When downed logs blocked the path, the guys hopped out and carried their canoes, called portaging. We were able to keep going no matter what was in our path, Jackson says. We never said, stop, we don't want to do this anymore. A scout never quits on his dreams. The guys were rewarded later as the creek widened and fewer obstacles littered the water. They could paddle more freely and quickly, even taking off for a fun race. Work like a team. The scout motto is, be prepared. Monitoring the weather, the troop knew it was supposed to rain before they left. To make packing up easier, they started that evening after dinner instead of waiting until morning and packing in the rain. It was a great idea. But, like paddling, you need to work as a team so the task goes smoothly. Some scouts tried carrying heavy equipment back to the troop trailer by themselves. Struggling with the gear quickly became frustrating, and they soon learned a lesson. Many hands make light work, Wyatt says. It's okay to ask for help even when you're a leader. A troop is a team, and everyone can contribute to solving problems and completing tasks. When you work together, you can all be prepared. The right moves. Whether you're weaving around logs or cruising on flat water, canoeing is a lot easier when you know how to paddle. Use these strokes to guide your boat where you want to go. Forward stroke helps you go forward. Place the paddle in the water and draw it back. Backstroke helps you to stop or move backward. Place the paddle in the water, keeping it vertical and pushing it forward. Drawstroke moves the canoe sideways toward the paddling side. Place the paddle far from the boat and draw it to you. Pushaway stroke moves the canoe sideways, away from the paddling side. Place the paddle close to the boat and push it away from you. Forward sweep turns your canoe. Create an arc with the paddle starting in front of you, which swings the canoe around. Reverse sweep. Turn your canoe. Create an arc with the paddle starting behind you, which swings the canoe around the other way. And finally, J-stroke. A forward stroke that counteracts any drifting, keeping you going straight. The paddling motion looks like the letter J. They're super! These high-performance cars really get up and go. The Bugatti N16 Minstel, horsepower, 1,600 horsepower, top speed, 261 miles. The W16 Minstel's large grille does more than look cool. It allows airflow into the powerful engine to keep it cool and used in previous Bugatti models, launching those vehicles to reach more than 300 miles per hour. A roadster is open air, so it can't go as fast as a coupe. But at 261 miles per hour, the W16 Minstel still ranks as one of the world's fastest roadsters. Lamborghini Reverto, horsepower, 1,015 horsepower, top speed, 217 miles. With its V12 combustion engine and three electric motors, the plug-in hybrid Revolto can switch from fully electric driving to revving up to go from 0 to 62 in 2.5 seconds. The vehicle's aerodynamics, including a shark nose, side fins, and back wing, help make the car super efficient. The interior features three digital displays that can be swiped for info, and there are 13 different drive modes easily controlled with dials on the steering wheel. McLaren Artura Spider, horsepower, 690 horsepower, top speed, 205 miles per hour. Not all cars are designed to do a burnout, but the Artura Spider is. With a spinning wheel pull-away mode, you can spin the tires, churning out an impressive cloud of white smoke before you take off. And the Artura Spicer can really take off, 0 to 62 in 3 seconds. While you're moving, press a button in the hardtop, retract in 11 seconds, transforming the vehicle into an open-air roadster. The windshield is designed to redirect wind for a calmer cabin so you can fully enjoy the audio speaker system even with the top down. Jason and the Argonauts. This tale features a lost sandal, a really cool boat, a wildly talented group of Greek heroes, and weird agriculture requests. Jason may have been born a prince, but things started out rough for the royal. Before Jason was even born, his future uncle Pelias decided to steal the throne. Pelias was a little worried about how this would all play out when his future nephew was born, so he sought advice from the Oracle of Delphi. The oracle told Pelias that he would be the king of locusts, but he should beware of the young man with one sandal. The oracle said that this mysterious one-shoed man would someday take Pelias' throne. Meanwhile, Jason's mother was so worried that Pelias would, due to her unborn son, the rightful ruler of Locus, that she gave birth in secret. She then sent little Jason to live with the centaur Charion, who raised and trained him to become a great hero. If this was a movie, we would put a montage right here. Continued. In time, Jason grew into the smart, handsome, and strapping young royal he was destined to be. He decided to return to his homeland and reclaim his throne. Jason said goodbye to his Greek hero, 101 teacher, and traveled all the way across Greece. At some point, he lost a sandal, but eventually, Jason made it to Locus to challenge his uncle. "Hey, I'm your long-lost nephew," Jason said when he came face-to-face with Pelias. "I think you're sitting in my seat. And by the way, do you have, like, a sock or something?" Pelias remembered the oracle's warning about a one-shoed man, so he came up with a cunning plan. Pelias told Jason that he'd give up the throne if Jason could bring him the golden fleece, the golden wool of an enchanted winged ram. The fleece was hanging in a faraway land called Colchis, at the edge of the known world. The king of Colchis, King Aetes, kept the fleece draped over the branch of a giant tree, guarded by a huge dragon that never slept. Pelias figured that the quest was so dangerous that his nephew would either give up or die trying. He was so confident that Jason wouldn't succeed that he even hired Argus, a talented shipbuilder, to make Jason a ship. But Jason believed in himself, and so he decided to embark on one of the greatest adventures of all time. Because he was a pretty smart guy, Jason began his quest by praying to the goddess Athena. She heard his plea and inspired Argus to go all out and design one of the biggest and coolest ships to ever exist. Argus created a nautical masterpiece, a magical ship with places for 50 rowers. Jason called it the Argo, after his builder. Ship? Check. Then Jason put the call out for a crew. And what a crew it was. The children of gods and kings came from all over Greece to join Jason. Even the mighty Heracles signed on. The crew included 50 of Greece's finest adventurers. The journey of Jason and his Argonauts is legendary. You could fill a book with their adventures. But for now, let's just say their quest was not an easy one. It seemed like Jason was never going to find the fleece. But eventually, he got a lucky break when they wound up in the country of Thrace. Thrace was ruled by a king named Phineas, who was good at telling fortunes that the gods had punished him for it. First they blinded him. Then they sent harpies to torment him. A harpy was a half-woman, half-bird creature that loved to make people suffer. Every evening at dinner, Phineas would find a great feast laid out for him. But as soon as he sat down to eat, the harpies would steal the food from him. Then these feathery fiends would leave behind such a stench that whatever food was left was ruined. So poor Phineas was hungry all the time, but could never eat. Also, he had to breathe through his mouth a lot. Jason offered to take care of the harpies if Phineas would agree to help him get to Colchis. "I'd pretty much do anything to never have to smell harpies again. If you can get rid of them, I'll help you in any way I can," the king promised. So Jason decided to set a trap for the harpies at the next dinner party. As soon as Phineas sat down to eat, the food snatchers appeared. But this time, two of Jason's strongest warriors jumped out and attacked. The harpies were so surprised and scared that they flew away and never returned. Phineas was so happy that he immediately held a great feast to honor his guests. While munching on the first bites of normal-smelling food he'd had in a while, Phineas told Jason everything he knew about how to make it safely to the island of Colchis. Finally, Jason was pretty sure he was at the end of his quest. Okay, there was that whole dragon thing. But after everything he'd been through already, he was confident he could handle it. They had some rough sailing and narrow escapes, but eventually the crew of the Argo reached the island of Colchis. Its king, Aetes, had a beautiful daughter named Medea, who seemed to hit it off with Jason, and she knew a little magic, which was pretty cool. But it became clear that King Aetes had no intention of giving up the precious golden fleece. He knew that Jason and the Argonauts were skilled warriors, so he didn't try to attack them. Instead, he made a deal. King Aetes said that he would give up the golden fleece if Jason could plow a field with two magical wild bulls. Now, at this point, Jason was getting fed up with all these heroic side quests, but he had no choice. This wasn't your average agricultural task, however. Turns out these bulls breathe fire, and instead of planting regular seeds while he plowed the field, Jason was supposed to plant dragon teeth, plucked from the very dragon guarding the fleece. Jason had no clue where to begin. It wasn't like he had been trained in the art of dragon farming. But thankfully, Medea had an idea, which he promised to share with Jason as long as he promised to take her back with him to Greece. Jason looked over at the fire-breathing bulls one more time and quickly agreed. Medea gave Jason some ointment and a bag of rocks. Not very flashy, but the ointment, she explained, would protect Jason from fire. So he rubbed it all over himself. Now, since the fire-breathing bovines couldn't burn him, Jason was able to corral the bulls and plow the field unscathed. But he couldn't declare victory just yet. Jason was dropping dragon teeth into the soil, not seeds. Instead of growing tomatoes of rutabagas, dragon teeth grow human soldiers, and apparently they grow really fast. Suddenly the field was full of armed men who had sprung out of the ground ready to attack. Following Medea's advice, Jason started to throw rocks in the middle of the crowd of soldiers. The rocks didn't hurt them, but made them turn on each other. Each soldier thought the next guy over had struck him. So instead of attacking Jason as King Aetes had hoped, the soldiers attacked each other. Soon all the fleshly grown soldiers were back in the dirt. It seemed Jason had passed King Aetes' test, but the hero and his crew of Argonauts still had to face the dragon guarding the oak tree where the golden fleece was kept. Jason sighed. The number of dangerous creatures on this expedition was starting to get out of hand. Once again, it was Medea to the rescue. She brewed a potion to put the dragon to sleep. Jason hid the mixture in a bowl of water by oak tree. Even dragons get thirsty sometimes. The beast slurped it right up. In just a few seconds, the dragon was peacefully snoring away. Jason and Medea snatched the fleece and rushed back to the Argo for the long journey back to Lokos. Jason's story was far from over, but hey, at least he managed to find that fleece. This myth reminds us that to be a great hero, you have to surround yourself with a great team. Jason needed a lot of help to succeed on his quest to get the golden fleece. It's important to surround yourself with great people, but it's also good to surround yourself with great technology. Jason really could have used a GPS. Fitness first. Trail mix doesn't have to be boring. Mix and match the following ingredients to create your own perfect trail snack. Nuts, loaded with protein and fiber. Nuts also pack plenty of vitamins and minerals. Examples, pistachios, almonds, cashews, walnuts, peanuts, and pecans. Sweets, Add to your favorite sweet treat to round out the mix. Just be sure to use sparingly. Examples, M&M's, peanut butter chips, chocolate chips, and marshmallows. Seeds. Seeds pack a wallop of nutritional benefits. Plus, they are a great alternative for those with nut allergies. Examples, sunflower, sesame, flax, pumpkin, and hemp. Dried fruit. In moderation, these sugary treats can be a great source of fiber, calcium, and vitamins. Examples, blueberries, apricots, cranberries, raisins, banana chips, coconut, and cherries. Grains. These crunchy carbohydrates boost energy levels and leave you feeling full. Examples, granola, popcorn, pretzels, Chex, and Cheerios. Religious emblems. African Methodist Episcopal. African Methodist Episcopal Scouts can learn more about their Christian faith by earning the following. Jesus and Me. The Jesus and Me emblem is for Cub Scouts in kindergarten and first grade. This program introduces Jesus as the Son of God in familiar terms so that young children can see Jesus in their own day-to-day experiences as a storyteller, teacher, friend, and healer. God and Me. The God and Me emblem is for Cub Scouts in second and third grades. This program helps AME Cub Scouts become best friends with Jesus and tell their story of God and Me together. God and Family. The God and Family emblem is for Scouts in fourth through sixth grades. This program helps youth understand the importance of family and God's role in a healthy family. God and Family provides an opportunity for youth and their families to explore their faith together. God in Church. The God in Church emblem is for Scouts BSA members in 6th through 8th grades. This program will lead youth on a faith journey with three parts, meeting Jesus, worshiping God, and witnessing and ministering for Christ. And finally, God in Life. The God in Life emblem is for Scouts BSA members and Venturers in 9th through 12th grades. In this program, AME Scouts and Venturers will study the lives of men and women in the Bible and discover what their lives teach them about God. Youth will then be challenged to integrate their faith into their daily lives. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.